host, Annie Watson, and welcome back to another episode of R is Sarer. This week's interview is with Megan Freeman, who has 2Q37 chromosomal deletion syndrome. It's the number 2, the letter Q, and the number 37, all in one little package, I guess. I actually met Megan on an R Odyssey virtual meetup, and she seemed very sweet, and we finally were able to do an interview together. She is very sweet, and she is very much into awareness, obviously, and actually her rare disease. She's one of 150 people in the world who have it. So she definitely is awareness heavy and a massive advocate, which I love. But just for some background, 2Q37 deletion syndrome is a deletion of part of a chromosome, and it causes a lot of delaying in growth and puberty and developmental issues. She didn't elaborate at all, but she also has a learning disability and auditory processing issues, which I don't know if those are related to her rare disease, but she also has those as well. But yes, Megan and I talked about a lot of things, mainly advocacy and just the pure connection that comes from the rare disease community. She mentions Rare Disease Week, which was just finished up a couple weeks ago in July, and it's usually every February, but it was virtual in July this year. She talks about dating with a rare disease because her boyfriend actually has a rare disease, so we talk about that as well, and her diagnosis story and all that good stuff. Be sure to subscribe to R is Sarer on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to follow me on Instagram at R is Sarer Podcast. Without further ado, let's get into the episode. Hi, Megan. How are you?
Hi, Annie. Good. How about you?
I'm good. I'm very excited to do our interview. I don't know. It's just a basic summer day. I have a week until school starts,
Ooh. Which
is crazy. Yeah. Crazy and good at the same time. I don't know how I feel about it, but trying to make my summer last as long as possible.
Right. Enjoy it all that it lasts. And yeah, I know what you mean about enjoying things, man. I'm excited. You know, it's happy weather, so that's all good.
Yes. It was thunderstorming a couple days ago, and now it's like 85 and sunny. So we have met the happy summer vibes finally in the weather. But yeah. So Megan, tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what rare disease you have, what you're doing with your life right now, and a fun fact about yourself.
Sure. So Annie, my name is Megan Freeman. I have a rare disease called 2Q37 chromosome deletion syndrome. And essentially what that is that it affected my growth. So although it's a chromosome issue, it definitely has affected, I don't want to say it's necessarily genetic, but it's chromosome, and it's kind of like there's been some like deletion. There's been a few like 2 deletions in the arm of the gene. So that's where it would classify as genetic. And that because of that, then I just had slow, I kind of basically had slow growth where I didn't have puberty until I was 16. So I definitely was wondering, okay, what's going on there? So it just kind of, I had a pituitary thing, which affects the back of your pituitary gland. So that's kind of what threw it all off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And has there been like what has made your like life experience different than say like you're someone who you know who's the exact same age as you that doesn't have your rare disease? Like what makes it different?
So I can talk about that. And I realized I forgot to mention also the fun fact, which I can get that in.
Go ahead.
The fun fact is that I can talk about what I'm doing with my life too, which, you know, I'm being creative, but with the fun fact is that I was in the cloud forest in Costa Rica as of a few years ago. I had the honor to go on a study abroad, and I really do recommend people go and study abroad when they can, because it's great. There's a saying, people walk on clouds. I literally felt like I was walking on a cloud because it's like, at least like 8,000 feet up in elevation, similar to like airplanes that go up that high. So
incredible. That's crazy. I've never heard of it before, so I might have to check it out when I'm older.
You should. Yeah, I was just right before the edge of it, where it's all misty up there and nothing dries. I was having some wet clothes because it was raining and everything was just all moist and damp.
Honestly, if you're in Costa Rica and you're talking about moist and damp, that seems fine. Like, usually outside of like the Caribbean and Latin America and in warm weather there, you usually be like, ew, moist and damp. But when you're in Costa Rica and you're describing moist and damp, I think that's probably a good thing.
It was very good. Yeah. So yeah, so there was that. And I certainly saw all sorts of different, like, good coffee. I mean, I've really kind of been, my mom likes to joke I'm a coffee snob, whether that or not. I mean, I had some good coffee and just, it really kind of sparked my creativity with all like different coffees and what's good, what's not, you know, what goes with different things.
I love that. So you know, like, if it's a sweeter note coffee to put it with this food, is that what you mean?
Well, yeah. So essentially, like, I can tell if coffee is bad or not just by smelling. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but I can literally do the sniff test and I can be able to taste, like, I've been able to taste the different, like, the different variety of coffee, even just in, like, one country. And, like, Monteverde, it was incredibly just kind of nutty, while then in San Jose, it was very citrusy. So it was very great to see the differentiations.
That is okay. That is, all of what you just said makes me so happy. First of all, just travel in general. I love travel. I want to travel again. Stupid COVID, but I want to travel again. But my mom and I would love to have you share some of the wealth of your sniff test gift, because we are coffee addicts.
Oh, I'd love to happily share. I'd happily go and give you the tips and the ins and outs of what's good, what's not.
Yeah. Just having this, the sniff test, I'm like, that is a superpower that I would love to have. I know everybody's like invisibility or reading people's thoughts. I'm like, now that you've said this, that's the superpower I want.
I can happily help you with that. Yeah.
Yes, of course. I would love to know your tips and tricks later on, but yes, of course. So Megan, tell us a little bit about your diagnosis story. So how does that work out with a chromosomal disorder?
Yeah, so my diagnosis story, I was just kind of wondering, well, what is going on? I mean, it's hard in that just over the years, I got all sorts of diagnoses for having a learning disability, because I certainly was like slow to like be able to have slow auditory processing and being able to just not be good with like fine motor stuff. So there's all these tests, and I feel that then I was kind of wondering, okay, so what's going on here? Why am I not having puberty yet? And that was really, really hard. So then I got the diagnosis, like I got told by one of my doctors that, oh, you should go see a geneticist, which I went, like, I traveled 40 something minutes to go see this amazing geneticist. And he then was able to give the results. And I remember sitting there on the couch where I was sitting with my parents, and I was thinking, well, I remember thinking, am I going to die? I remember that thought, because I had that like pituitary gland in the back of my head, which meant that I had a benign tumor. So that was, I can remember it like it was yesterday, just sitting on my black couch, just hearing that. And I think we all were kind of processing that.
Mm-hmm. And how does that, I'm assuming you had to get that removed. Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So for like at first every 6 months or so, I'd have to go have an MRI to make sure that everything's good. And then after a while, I did it like every once, like a few years or so. And I've also had to have meds. Like I had a patch. I had like this little like patch that can help like give like that like to help to help give the hormones, since there's a hormone issue essentially too relating to this. And then I also had to have half a pill, which I still take just to monitor, just to make sure that everything's good, because it's just amazing when you see everything kind of out of whack when it's like too, like when there's too much of an overgrowth. I mean, it's crazy how small, tiny overgrowths can really affect things like that.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Also, I didn't know that pituitary glands, like a location, could equal a tumor. I you learn something new every day.
Oh yeah, yeah, the things you learn. I mean, yeah, so I literally, I mean, luckily I was fortunate that my parents found out about this group called Unique, which is based in the UK, where it's geared towards people with chromosome disorders, which that doesn't necessarily mean mine. They literally have all sorts of different rare diseases listed there as disorders, as they call it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just kind of, oh, sorry, what were we going to say?
Oh, go ahead.
I'm going to say that. Then I saw a catalog of people, certainly, and there's some people, like, seeing a picture of someone that had my rare disease, I was thinking, okay, now I felt like the pieces were kind of finally connecting together. And perhaps, I mean, I'd like to think it's a gift, because, I mean, God gives us all kind of gifts of life where we don't exactly know, you know, what's happening. Life can be truly a mystery, I think, that way. But I think that it kind of made me kind of piece things together that perhaps this is why, you know, I have a rare disease, I have a learning disability. Perhaps this is why I've had all the kind of issues that I've had, you know. And then also seeing someone else that kind of looked like me, I kind of felt like, okay, I mean, there's kind of other people out like there in my position, so I'm not the only one. So that kind of helped. That really helped, I think, just with not only seeing that, you know, and I was going through my process of still, you know, trying to accept it, but I think it's also been crucial in that then at doctor's offices, I've just been able to show the pamphlet that we printed out.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm always for, like, representation, whether it's in, like, doctors' pamphlets or magazines or, in extreme cases, like, even, like, TV shows and books and movies. I'm all for representation because I know, like you were saying before we started recording, like, how exactly rare your condition is, which we can get to later, but it's definitely, like, it can be terrifying being like, yeah, this is a rare condition. It's terrifying. Like, the word rare, as much as I love to embrace it and, like, wear it like a badge of honor, it's terrifying. And once you see, like, once you even meet somebody else with it, or you see, like, it mentioned somewhere in a TV show, or you see someone with it in, like you said, a magazine, it takes all of the stress, most of the stress, not all of it. Let's be real here. There's still stress with it. It takes most of the stress off of your shoulders.
Yeah, yes. So I think because of that, I mean, I've always kind of wanted to do something to, you know, spread the awareness. But I think, you know, it was a process trying to accept and see. I mean, it was kind of harder, like, when I was a junior in college, then something hit me where, you know, that was kind of tough, realizing, like, hey, I kind of felt all alone in that sense. But yeah, I just definitely been, you know, trying to just create courage and just create an awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I love that. I feel like most people in the rare disease space go into advocacy because it's in our genes. And in some people, it's literally in their genes. But but it's having to self-advocate, like, it's almost inevitable that you do some sort of not saying, like, you have to any of my listeners who have a rare condition. You don't have to. It's just, I think it just works naturally in our favor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like that. I like that a lot of people for the non-rare disease, like, for the able-bodied person, advocacy is terrifying. And I'm terrified by advocacy too. I honestly don't know what I'm doing some of the time. I'm not an expert, let's be real here.
But yeah,
I'm an expert on my condition, but not on advocacy itself. Like, I mess up, I'm human. But I feel like we go into it a lot less, like, fearful of what people are gonna think, because we already have received that kind of thing,
like self-advocacy. So we're like, we've already gone through this. Let's just put it out there because otherwise people aren't going to know.
Yeah. And I think there's also kind of like the thinking, well, you know, I love Odile, but I know that there's someone that like had said to me once, you don't consider yourself to have a rare disease, do you? So I feel that, you know, that we also, I think, need to clear that up and say that, well, there's people, as you say, talking about, you know, representation and diversity, speaking of it, I think that we gotta just think that, well, what about people who, you know, have a rare disease they don't even know about? I mean, sure, there's people with rare diseases, you know, the stereotypical ones, you know, with the people that have to have walkers, have to be in wheelchairs, but what about the people like us who have a rare disease that maybe people may not necessarily know?
Yeah, like the, not just the ones who need mobility aids, which that's totally valid. And also mobility aids are not just for the elderly. Let's normalize that, people. Like people my age, one of my narcolepsy friends has used mobility aids in the past because it helps her. And like that, number one. And like you said, like you and I, we don't necessarily have like a look. There's no look to a rare disease unless it's like a physical disability, but like there's usually no uniform look for how DQ37 deletion or how narcolepsy should look. Like there's not, or at least from my understanding of your condition, like there's no one look, and you can't, that's just, I try to emphasize that on my podcast and just to my friends in general, that like you wouldn't know and besides the fact that I've told you. Mm-hmm. And if people know that we look like normal people, but we have a lot of medical baggage that we carry on a daily basis. If we make that known, people are going to be a little less generalizing about it. If that makes any sense.
You should feel like, you know, I'm a millennial. And so you grew up and I'm guessing like, right with the technology right there. But I think that there is definitely a shift where there's also more and more talk about like mental health, I've been noticing, certainly with like Instagram and stuff. So I think with this, I think we definitely got to talk about that and raise awareness about that, because there's been quite a bit of like some stuff that can get people with rare diseases. I mean, no, I've dealt with quite a bit of it.
Yeah. And I'm like adding on to that, like body positivity. And for those who do have mobility aids and wheelchairs, or even who don't, like the conversations just kind of skip over us, I guess. And like the disabled community and the rare disease community, it kind of just goes like, woo, over our head. I know nobody can see this because this is audio, but it goes over our heads. Mm-hmm. And it's annoying. It really is. And it's hard to do that as a teenager or as a young adult with a condition.
Yeah. They focus on one thing, which is great. You know, if you're trying to focus on, you know, not just people being skinny or fat, you know, obviously it's not taken to an extreme, but then need to also talk about the, you know, mental health that can come in different ways.
Yeah. And there's the extreme. I feel like from what I understand of my exposure of mental health talk on social media, they present the extremes.
Yeah.
But they don't present the middle. Or even if you don't necessarily have a diagnosed condition, what it can feel like to have bad mental health. Mm-hmm. If you don't have like diagnosed anxiety or diagnosed depression, like they use those terms generally and throw them around. And it's like, no, those are like diagnosable things. And I don't have those diagnosable things, but I don't know what to do. They do the extremes, but they don't do the middle, and they don't do the other side of the, I don't have a diagnosed condition.
Yeah. Like I think it's okay if you do, I don't know. I think that I'm talking about this as, you know, stuff that I've just, dealt with recently, but I think that it's kind of just, I think it's kind of something where when it comes to mental health, I think sometimes some of the strengths are just getting through days. I mean, I literally felt that. It's kind of extreme, but some of that.
Yeah. I I totally understand. Excuse me. I totally understand that, like, it's for all my listeners out there, it is okay to not feel okay, but don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to ask for help. If you see someone or know someone who's going through something, and that's that, that harm is going to, like, that they're going to harm themselves or something, tell somebody, because you want what's best for them. I know it's terrifying, and I've never had to do that myself, but if you know someone who's going through something and they're not going to ask for help, it's in your best interest as a friend to get that help for them. That's all I'm going to, that's all I'm going to, I am not a mental health expert. I'm not a psychologist, but
no,
don't be afraid to ask for help. I know it's terrifying, but it's going to be worth it. And also therapy is okay. Let's destigmatize therapy. Therapy's not a bad thing.
It's stereotypical. How are you feeling? Type thing. Maybe I'm trying to get some of that.
Exactly. Exactly. Therapy's not bad. And like it's okay to go to say, yeah, I was at therapy today. Like, that's a, that's okay. That's fine. It's, it means you're taking care of yourself.
Right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So Megan, what makes your case of DQ37 deletion unique from the very few other people that have it? But what makes your case different?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the first one is that I've obviously felt alone at times, of that I've not really known anyone who has it. I mean, my boyfriend said that he his mom knows someone who, I guess, you know, happens to have mine in addition to the thing that he has. So that, well, it's a mom of any of the kid, because the kid's too young, but that's kind of really, really kind of reassuring. It does make me feel really, really great to hear, because like I said, I'm just trying to find, you know, find other people out there and see, well, okay, so who else has it, you know? So I think also to answer your question, how it's different. There's three different types of 2Q37. There's the 0.1, the 0.2, and the 0.3. And this I actually advocated for when I was doing Rare Disease Week, where I was meeting with like the reps for my senators and then the rep for my state representative. And I was just explaining how I think it's really tough. I mean, some people, like one out of seven people with my condition, could have a heart deformality, or they could have so it's kind of crazy to think that they could have heart deformalities and they'd have to have some open heart surgery. That just, when I read that, I feel for them, because I gotta just think how hard that's gotta be. Never mind, you know, there's a lack of awareness. So I do think that what makes my condition also kind of, I guess, unique is that, you know, I'm only one of 150 people. And in order for a rare disease to be considered rare, at least in the US, that is under 200,000 cases.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like mine's like more of the common rare disease, and I've met some people with rare disease, but I think yours is on the like extremely rare spectrum. Like that's just like that's less than, like, I have doubled the amount of that people in my class in high school. Like that's like, it's like people always say, like, try to wrap our heads around like millions and billions and trillions. But when you live in a world of 7 billion people, which is ridiculous, and you're told you have, like, how did it feel knowing that, like, when you first found that out?
Yeah, you know, it's a really, really good question. Not many people, I think that's also something you need to talk about too, because people that have heard my rare disease, they don't ask how I am. They say, okay, cool. I mean, because I understand they may not know, they're trying to process it. But when I heard that, when I found that out, I really felt kind of a bittersweet kind of emotion. And I think that now, I've since found some own emotions that I know, and like I've tried to explain to my parents. I think when you have a rare disease, you can only, like, you can understand why when someone else doesn't have a rare disease, I feel like maybe they can only understand so much, you know? So I think When I felt that, I do remember feeling kind of this bittersweet mixture of emotions where I was happy in a sense that, you know, fortunately, I guess, I was able to get this diagnosis, to know that, okay, this is what's going on. But on the other hand, it's just hard. I mean, I recently had this in an Odyssey blog post, but I remember literally thinking, okay, am I going to die? And then once I found that out, that it wasn't, you know, that I wasn't going to die. And luckily, obviously felt good. But one of my first reactions was after, am I going to die, is I just want to have a husband. So I guess, you know, it's just kind of, you know, it's just part of that journey where I feel like having a rare disease, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like, I know I've included it in our Odyssey talks that we've had. I think I brought it up at least once or twice, but that I think having a rare disease, just there's all those emotions. I feel like it kind of ages you 20 years or so. So I guess
For sure. I feel like any person with a rare disease, especially like young adults and like Gen Z, millennial, like even if you're like in your early 30s, like I feel like it ages you. Like all of our medical knowledge and just the experiences we've been through, and the amount of times we've fought for health insurance to cover something, is probably more than like the amount of rare diseases that there are. Like I think, or more than the amount of people who have rare diseases. Like we all fight these battles like ourselves, but we all go through the same thing. Or similar things like fighting for health insurance and getting somebody to hear our story. Like it's isolating, but also it's like somebody else has gone through it.
Right. Like, I mean, someone's got to do this, right? I mean, literally was like advocating for, you know, also, you know, include that story about the heart issue with newborn screening and, you know, for all these different policies out there that maybe people may not necessarily know. I mean, because if you're not like a medical expert in the rare disease community, I don't think you necessarily know.
Exactly. And there's only so much knowledge that medical students have. I follow a few people who have ME, which is similar to like chronic fatigue syndrome. ME is like, I don't know what the acronym stands for because it's really long, but it's similar to chronic fatigue syndrome, which is a chronic illness. And so one of the people I follow who has it reposted a tweet that said, it was like a picture of a tweet, and it was from a doctor who knew very little about ME. It's like the amount that I didn't know about ME until I was diagnosed with it. Like, sadly, that's the reality we live in. Like, unless you're specializing in something, like I believe that most of the reform within doctors themselves starts at the medical school level, because they're not educating them, and nobody talks about that. I feel like it's not talked about enough.
Like, yeah.
It's if they don't learn it in med school or in residency, when they're hands-on working with RAs and RNs, RAs is college, RAs is college dorms, RNs and PAs, that's what I'm thinking of, PAs and doctors, when they're in the nitty gritty, if they don't learn that, then they're never going to learn it.
Right.
It's, I don't know. I, as someone who has a sibling who's going to go into medicine go into the medical field and who has family members that have been in the medical field, I'm like, this just seems obvious, but like I said, I feel like not enough people are talking about it. But
What about all the like other policies as opposed to just trying to treat one for all type thing? You know, it's not those things that aren't just, you know, that doesn't just necessarily get cured just like that, you know?
Yeah, there's so many nuances to all these cures and medications, and it's amazing to reach like FDA approved status, but it's how's the patient going to react to it once they switch? Or what if the basic Medicaid or Obamacare doesn't cover it? Like, it's great to see that, like, there was an ad for a medication that was recently approved for, they advertise it for obstructive sleep apnea, but it's covered for narcolepsy. I'm like, this is great. But like, I'm not on it. I haven't needed to switch, but like, what if I need to switch once I'm off my parents' health insurance and health insurance doesn't cover it?
Yeah.
The ad can only do so much. Like, it's crazy to think that they can go so far. And it's like the people who need it most can't get it.
Yeah, that's why I do think that, like, I mean, I was looking at like some of the senators and how they fought prescription drug crisis. That's why I think that we got to just, you know, talk about that as a whole. So, you know, that'll definitely be one of my next things too, I think, you know. And if there's any politicians out there listening, I just want to get the awareness out there too, that I think that it's really, I think we really need to have it, and to kind of have it universal, like not universal in terms of, oh, everyone only has this healthcare plan, but in terms of that, you know, I know how expensive drugs can be, so it'd be nice to have it just lowered so that we can
And I saw today that apparently the poverty level in the U.S. is at like an all-time low or something like that. Like poverty hasn't, like, it's at its best it's been, I guess. I don't know, poverty is not a good thing, but like there aren't as many people in poverty as there was like last year, like 2 years ago, I think is what I saw, which is great. That means that we're financially improving, but also like I learned this actually in religion class. The poverty level is so low, but nobody talks about the fact that once you're out of the arbitrary poverty level, because they set a number every year, there's people who are like just above it. And it's so with stuff like prescription drug prices and those who need medicine to survive or need it for their condition, and they're making like they're trying to make ends meet.
That
poverty level, sadly, is closer in sight than what we talk about. And I think that financial understanding I think the most professional economists that are on like CNBC every day, they don't know everything. They don't know everything about the market and about finance. This is definitely not a conversation I've ever had on my podcast, but I think that understanding how, it took junior year religion class for me to understand exactly how terrifying the poverty level can be and how close, like, there's so many people below the poverty level, but there's another thing where it's like near poverty level. That number is even more staggering. Do your research to my listeners, but that's even more staggering. And with healthcare being expensive, sadly, that can be a lot more imminent to people who have rare conditions or need mobility aids and are on things like Social Security and SSI, Supplemental Security Income, or on food stamps. Like that's a lot. Sadly, that's like, I've talked about it with people who do receive like Social Security, that it's sadly like forced poverty. But I think pushing for policies like the SSI Restoration Act and trying to improve the quality of life for those receiving supplementary income, that's going to improve. That's going to keep that poverty level headline not so much a headline as more of a reality that we're keeping fewer people in poverty. But I don't know. I healthcare is so freaking expensive that I just, and so many other countries abroad have some, like, I know the Britain's like national healthcare society, like they call it NHS, I don't know what it stands for, but like their healthcare is actually not that bad. And in Australia they get free universal healthcare. I'm like, what are we doing? There's something that's not, I don't know, I don't have, it's like I'm not like, oh, Democrat for healthcare, Republican for healthcare. Like I don't align with certain political beliefs, but I do believe that like we should all get healthcare. It's just how we do it that's different.
Have their own thing they do.
I'm way too young to try to explain it to a podcast audience. I am not qualified enough to, that's not my job. So I can only do so much. No one came on to me to wonder how my political beliefs were with universal healthcare. That's not why people click on this episode. They were here to learn about you.
Just with having a rare disease, I think you kind of hear about that. What maybe people that don't have a rare disease don't necessarily know about all the ins and outs.
Yeah, I feel like people like who are able-bodied and healthy post about, like, especially around like election cycles, they post a lot about like supporting representatives and supporting bills. I have never posted so much political stuff and bills and about bills in Congress and about government programs until I started my rare disease Instagram. Because it's ingrained in our blood.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
It's special. I mean, it's part of our existence in the U.S., but...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Speaking of you, what does a day in your life look like, just as a rare disease patient?
So it's a good question. I get up, I have coffee, as I know, like we talked like separately about how much I do love my coffee. So I have my coffee. I try and just look at a Bible app that I have. I have this like Bible app on my phone. It helps. It really helps bring perspective. And I know obviously we're busy and, you know, especially me just, you know, if I'm away sometime, I mean, not necessarily, but I think just looking at that and just trying to just, then also I do some cards. I've done a lot of like greeting cards throughout the day. It's just to kind of share an awareness about what my rare disease is and just trying to just get awareness out there. And I'm in the process of going to see if I can like get it somewhere where I can sell them. But like, I've definitely been like just doing like basically like door to door selling on Facebook and Instagram.
I love that. Do you make them yourself?
No. So I buy these blank greeting cards and then I just draw onions, which I actually have been like a finalist for this. There's this competition that Every Life has for rare disease. Well, if you're an artist, since I do love being creative, I just have been able to just design something and then I posted it and then I do an artist statement into my name. So, you know, who the heck knows if I win, but if I win, I get a chance to win a stipend to DC for Rare Disease Week next February. So I got an email that I'm one of the finalists. So I just kind of also done something like that just to get the
That's banner. Amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That is so exciting. I am in awe of people like you who are very creative and artistic and can just like whip out a drawing or like a sketch like out of nowhere. Like I gotta sit down and think about it and like think my thoughts and feel my feels, and then I'm like, I have an idea.
Hey, yeah. Well, thank you. I literally just draw stuff. I mean, my mind, I like to literally joke, and I've said on my Instagram, I don't know if you've been able to see on my card making Instagram, which is out there, can get that out for people that are looking. I am just literally saying that my mind goes like a million miles a minute, because literally like I'm often just laying in bed and I'm thinking, oh, an idea, perfect. So I sometimes write poetry, sometimes I've wrote songs, sometimes I've just kind of literally just started like drawing stuff that comes to mind.
I love that. And honestly, like that seems, I feel like that's a very like logically like healthy way to just like get it all out in like a positive way. But that's got to be great for your mental health, I feel like.
Yeah, no, thanks. It definitely has. Yeah, it's definitely, I think it's helped. I mean, especially, you know, it all kind of started during this pandemic when I was kind of thinking, well, okay, so I want to do something. Like one of my friends who I've known from my college, who she graduated in like the 80s, she's an artist and she teaches art, and she did this space, she did what she calls this spacesuit. It's literally like this thing where, those moon suits where there's a suit that can protect you from different chemicals.
Yeah.
She had something going where she like was going to design suits and she's going to send it out to a bunch of people. So she sent one out to me and then I just started drawing. And so I did that. And so I was thinking, you know, trying to break, like the theme was trying to break kind of barriers. So quite literally and figuratively, we're breaking barriers. And so I was breaking barriers. And I bring this up because this kind of led to my card making, where I was thinking, yeah, so naturally one of the barriers breaking, I think trying to raise awareness about, is me having a rare disease, that I have a rare disease called 2Q37 chromosome deletion. So this, I guess, it's naturally kind of unfolded where now I've started to draw onions, since it's kind of like, she said in an understatement, that we all kind of, there's layers and layers to peel back upon someone, especially, you know, in my case with the rare disease, newborn screening.
I love that. I love that little onion analogy. And I don't know why whenever somebody uses the onion peeling back the layers analogy, all I can think of is Shrek.
Yes.
All I can think of, and when Donkey's talking about the parfait and the onion, when they're walking through the swamp, that's all I can think of. But that's, I love that. I love that analogy. And I say that as a compliment, but I love that analogy so much.
As a compliment. Thank you.
Of course. Of course. On that happy note, we're going to take a little break and then we'll get back to the rest of the episode with Megan. And we are back. So Megan, when did you first discover the rare disease community? Like, what was your first encounter with the rare disease community?
No, it's a really good question. I actually, I think it's kind of been a journey leading up to that, because I know that it's been something where I really, like, I heard, like, before I was dating him at the time, I was in the same class as my eventual boyfriend, myself, and just when, like, good friends, he was saying, like, talking about his rare disease, like, talking about him, but having that in class, like, presenting it, since we're in psychology, so I was so proud of him. And then I had then wanted to tell him, oh, I have one too, but, you know, I didn't want to steal his moment away, you know, so I just kind of had that. And then on our first date, it was at, like, his vacation house in the Catskills, and his mom was asking, since I guess she heard that I had a rare disease, so what can you tell me about your experience having a rare disease? So she just, I mean, she being the person that started a rare disease organization herself, she just has been able to, I think, really kind of connect me to all these different people, whether she knows it or not. I mean, just through her organization, I've been able to go to all these virtual, they have these charity events, these, like, what they call the big soirees, the sugar soirees that they call them. So it's just kind of been an amazing feeling just being able to connect with them. And then just through Ben, I mean, Ben's my boyfriend, has really kind of been able to just connect me to just so many amazing people through Odyssey and just doing all these.
Oh, that's so precious. I love that. And I hope you don't mind me asking, but what is dating like with a rare disease? And is it weird dating somebody who also has a rare disease? Like, what is that dynamic like?
That's a great question. It's not something people talk about enough, and I was thinking, yeah, it'd be good for one of the topics at these conferences, like maybe they do, but, you know, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, I finally feel like, for once, I kind of was realizing this, that I kind of feel like, for once, he kind of just gets me. Like, I don't feel like I have to hide myself with having a rare disease, you know. So I think just, you know, I've been in a relationship, so shared, and it kind of felt like I was in the God. Well, with him, I feel like it's just been amazing. Well, he gets like when people don't understand. I mean, there's been so many situations where there's been different people not understanding me. So he's always been there. He's always been supportive. I do think that it's been definitely challenging, just because with his real disease, like he has vision issues. So, yeah, I mean, he has a bunch of stuff, but like one of the things that he has, that's kind of another thing, is he has epilepsy. I mean, since he's had like seizures, since he has seizures connected to his rare disease, and he has epilepsy. So just kind of hard. Like at one point on one of our dates, he actually ended up having a seizure in front of me. So.
And that's definitely a lot of patience. Like, has your patience, like, spectrum, I guess, changed since you've started dating?
Yeah, I guess I kind of, you know, it definitely was hard. I mean, I guess people said, oh, you're so patient, and I kind of feel like just because I have a rare disease, I guess because of that, there's kind of that patience that naturally is there, and the understanding of having a disability, since I have a learning disability and I'm slow auditory processing, so literally I have to ask people sometimes, like, maybe it's just my learning disability, where I have to like have people repeat things to me sometimes, which in jobs I'm fine, but like in personal life, I guess that's the thing. So I guess, yeah, I guess it's been definitely a challenge, you know, no doubt, just fluctuations. But I think in a sense, it's kind of helped. I felt like it's kind of helped us get closer because of that. We kind of had that like shared understanding.
I love that. That is so precious. I just love that so much. It is adorable.
So now it's one of those things where the interesting thing is we're literally talking about seizures. He's talking about what to expect. And then, you know, then I saw him have that seizure, and that was obviously, I mean, that was for a few minutes, but that was just one of those things that they don't really forget. So, you know, sometimes if he has headaches or something, like I'd like to drink wine. So sometimes if he has headaches and maybe he's not able to have that, so that's kind of frustrating. If he does hear this, no offense, it's just, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you maybe plan some things, but you have to kind of plan around that. So I don't know. I really feel like God kind of just put him into my life, you know.
Oh, I love that. I love that so much. That is so precious. I love that. People don't talk about dating with rare diseases, let alone like of like the one person having a rare disease, let alone two people having rare diseases.
I know. Double whammy. It's definitely kind of interesting. It's funny that we both have to go sometimes for like MRIs and stuff for different things. So yeah, we kind of know what that's like. Okay. I mean, he has so many meds. I mean, like, it's hard in that, like, he always has to, like, when packing, he has to bring, like, 10 different meds with him, so it's always definitely a challenge. Like, do I have this med? Do I not have that med? Did I take this med?
But honestly, like, one thing that I feel people are worried about with dating, and I'm worried about it, not that I've ever dated anybody ever, but going into, like, college and dating and stuff like that, my dad's gonna be terrified listening to this, but just like people are always, I'm worried with a rare disease that people don't understand. And I think, yeah, you said like double whammy, but also it's kind of a blessing because you don't have to explain yourself that much, right?
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Yeah, like definitely, like if there's misunderstandings or whatever, I mean, it like for these like talks about like kind of rare disease and it about people kind of saying certain things, he's like, oh, that's not good. And sometimes, you know, his moments will, you know, for little times of the day where it's a little out of it, but I think that like it's just kind of been an amazing thing where I feel like there's not quite that thing where you feel kind of alone in the sense that you're the only one having a rare disease, because I mean, he actually said too, like, because he has like slow motor issues. I mean, we both have kind of motor issues, so who the heck knows if that's kind of tied to a rare disease or not, but yeah, it's that extra kind of level of connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something that, like, I know, like, there's interabled couples and stuff like that, but again, I think just your example, like, I feel like that's so special, and I love that so much, and it makes talking about dating, like, a lot easier, because dating is daunting. It should just be like a slogan for every like young adult woman ever. Dating is daunting.
Yeah. Well, yeah, sure it was. And it kind of like, you know, it was kind of an interesting thing. I mean, I was just like, saying, oh, we're not going to date. We don't want to do that. I know we've been dating for two years. So I know like Valentine's Day, like his mom saw this like hashtag where she's like, yes, we can do it. Like, so she did that similar thing. Like, here's to having a rare disease, that these two people are doing it.
I love that. I love that so much. And hey, you have done, like you've said, you've done a lot of like networking and advocacy because of him and because of his mom. So I love that. I love that so much.
I really think that everything's kind of put into play because, you know, especially if I feel kind of alone, like before I was feeling alone as a junior in college, but you know, it's hard, but I felt kind of that sense of loneliness. And, you know, I felt like, you know, I think having a rare disease, it gives you all these different emotions. So, you know, if I have the wave of emotions, like it just, in hindsight, I'm glad that now if I have them, at least I have him and like have other people who also have rare diseases. So I feel like in this sense, I'm so fortunate that I have that support system that I didn't have.
I love that. Two questions. One of them is, what do you love about the rare disease community? And kind of playing off of that, what's your favorite moment so far as a part of the rare disease community or advocacy?
Yeah, good question. So I think that like, it is hard. And that like, yeah, that's a good question. Just, I guess it's something we also have to remind ourselves because we have rare diseases, that's tough. But I feel like because of having a rare disease, I know someone said this before, but with having a rare disease, I never would have met the people that I met. I mean, I feel like it definitely would have not, you know, like that's like literally one of the first few things in addition to us hanging out, brought me closer to a lot of C groups. So like I got so close, I've had such good friends, become such good friends with some of them. So, you know, I guess just with all these like good friends combined, you can say, I feel that I really think it's been a blessing, I guess you could say like a blessing disguise, where like in an odd enough way, I really kind of have felt the sense of connection. And I mean, there's all these like people in the community who are just super amazing. I mean, they're like, they don't hesitate to like forward information and say, hey, maybe you should check this group out, you know, we'll hear for you. So I think between that and then also, you know, getting to the point where you asked about what's my favorite moment? Well, I honestly think that it's been so, so great. So it's kind of, it is a tough question because we had so many great, like, I've loved going to all these different conferences, all these different, like, things at Global Genes or NORD or TREE, which is Ben's mom's organization has. But I think I've really enjoyed this rare disease week. So I think that is the ultimate kind of, I guess it gets in the cake. I mean, I'm hungry, but I think that it's just kind of been an amazing thing where I love being able to connect with people. And I feel like literally doing that, it's really energized me. I mean, I feel kind of like, yeah, like I've had some moments with some of my senators. Like I literally was emailing my senator afterwards. Well, not my senator, I should say, you know what I mean? But like the rep for the senator, I guess it's like almost similar, but I was emailing with the rep from Connecticut for one of the guys. And she said to me that you're an inspiration. So that just, it really made my day. In addition to then also, people have also been asking, like in my group, someone asked me to elaborate about newborn screening to one of my reps for the senators. So I was just honored just to be able to like elaborate more on that, in addition to saying my story and saying why we need to have this. And then it's also just kind of great in that I kind of got some issues on some of my senators' offices' radars, just kind of talking to them, and they said, okay, we'll keep that in consideration for the future. So inside my mind, I was thinking, yes, this is politic talk for, okay, they'll do it, I think. So who the heck knows that? But
I love that. That's amazing. That's awesome. I'm so proud of you. And that's amazing. And I wish I could have done Rare Disease Week this year. I had something else going on at that time, but I want to do it at some point in the future. I don't know when, but I want to do it soon.
Because also I think that like it was kind of like thinking, oh shoot, sometimes with these meetings they're kind of quick and it's kind of a nerve-wracking certainly experience, but you know, I was kind of like, okay, let's do this, I'm ready to go. So I think that with some of these rare disease like senator meetings, I think that emailing can help, because obviously you can only say so much, especially with like the planned time limit and the pictures and everything. So I think that just knowing that there's always people there to help that can show help too. I mean, last time I did it, there was no leader of my teams. That was stressful. So I was thinking, okay, if there's no leader that I did anything I can do now, you know, I can get through. So I think that's been kind of amazing. And I actually have also, it's also kind of something, I guess, something that I'm really, really, I guess you could say, proud of and happy of. One of my favorite moments to ultimately end this rare disease week, where there was this treasure hunt, because everyone knows that everyone is Zoom depleted at this point, you know, because who wants more Zoom meetings? So because of that, I just kind of been able to, I've really kind of been able to go and do this treasure hunt that they were doing to try and encourage everyone to go to Zoom meetings, because if you do, they have incentives where you get like certain, you mark certain codes, it can earn certain amounts of money, you know. And the top 50 treasure hunters, you know, I guess you could say, that were, you know, in the leaderboard, since I literally had a group leaderboard and everything, like first, second, third, and all the different rankings, which is hard to tell since they were trying this out for the very first time. They said that, like, you know, if you win, you get, could win from $1,000 to $5,000 to your rare disease organization of choice. So I was so ready. I was like, okay, I mean, I guess it also helped us kind of, no, I'm not going to lose. I'm going to win this. I want to win. So I kept going to all these things, and it's energizing to begin with, just connecting with all these people. And then I found out that I was one of the winners, one of the like top 50 people in the different categories.
That's amazing. That's awesome. That's so fun, though. That sounds like a lot of fun.
So on. It's such a fun thing. You should really definitely do it next time. I mean, I'm sure next time it'll be like in person, so it'll be great. Like, I ended up winning like $2,000, a little over $2,000 for, I'm going to give it to Odyssey. So
that's amazing. That's awesome. I love that. My last question for you, Megan, is why do you want to share your story?
Yeah, so good question. I think it kind of, as you're saying before, it kind of goes with the territory, I guess, with having a rare disease, but I really want to get awareness out there. I feel like, speaking of what we're talking about, like in like the side note, and not this podcast, just talking, I think that we really got it just kind of like bust open the doors, as some people are saying. I mean, someone was saying once that you got to be allowed, like I heard this actually with Disease Week, you got to be allowed, you got to just kind of make your voice known. So I think that's one of the things driving that. I feel like, you know, if something needs to be done, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to just sit back and like let someone else see if they can do it, because I think, well, especially with COVID, it's kind of like, you know, who's going to take charge of this? Who's going to take incentive? I mean, just, you know, all the things that came out of COVID, that was, I think, some of my advocacy. So I think the combination of me kind of feeling like, you know, I always like to kind of, I guess you could say, push the envelope a bit and push the door for that and be able to go and do those things. I think that's what's inspiring me in terms of just trying to not just clear up, I think, any misconceptions that come along the way, since it's rough. It really, really, it can suck when you have those, like, those things said, or those things where you feel like in those situations, this kind of feeling, well, shoot, I'm all alone. I think that it's just really good just to get the awareness out there, because I just hope that if there's anyone else there who has my rare disease, I hope I can be able to get that message out, to say that you're not alone. And just, I do this because one of the main reasons why I want to do this is because I don't want them to feel like they can't like say anything or speak up if there's no one else like them, you know, like if there's no one else, like I said, and that feeling of just feeling isolated, lonely. I want to get the awareness. I simply want to get the awareness out there, because for all we know, there's people who do have my condition who maybe they know about it, maybe they don't know, but just trying to just get more and more awareness. So, you know, to live, but to what extent, you know?
Mm-hmm. I love that. And awareness is so important. The more people that know, the better.
yeah, for sure. Yeah. Because I feel like it's something that doesn't get talked enough. I feel like it's something that doesn't get talked enough in a society. I mean, I've noticed like with the rare diseases and stuff, like they often think like, okay, well, cancer, sure, they talk about that. But I feel like not many people just talk about issues relating to rare disease, you know. People don't have it, but just in general. So just want to get that out.
Of course. I love that. Well, Megan, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, absolutely. It was so fun.
I love this. And any information Megan hands over to me will be in the show notes below. So you can go see her and her lovely work. I'll probably put one of her blog posts from our Odyssey in the show notes as well. Go follow her on Instagram. I'm to put her Instagram below. Don't remember off the top of my head right now, but
give it to you. Yeah, I can like message you since it's kind of a one that like it's kind of people don't always get it, but it's kind of like just think about it as code curator, but instead of code curator, it's code C dot curator as if curator, but not to message you too.
Of course, of course. Well, to all my listeners out there, be sure to subscribe to Art Is So Rare on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, and stay tuned for another episode next Thursday. See you guys then. Bye, everyone.